Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto hosting Dog Works Radio show from Willow, Alaska. On the line, I have Michelle in Denver. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. Today we're doing what we call a Bits and Bytes show, where we're going to talk about the news of the day in the world of dog training. But before we do that, I want to ask Michelle, what is going on at Denver Dog Works?
Well, at Denver Dog Works, we are undergoing one of the first blizzards of 2011, but also because 2010 was so dry, we are really having a situation here with the snow coming down and freezing roads. It's very dangerous right now.
So we're into the first week of 2011, and 2010 was a pretty good year for dog training, but how is 2011 shaping up and all of the new dog owners that purchased those dogs on Christmas?
You know, we've gotten about 4 calls from Christmas puppy owners, and I want to congratulate them for making the right choice and finding dog training. But our first quarter of the year is turning out to be fairly decent. Unusually high volume for us. January is usually a little bit slower. So, I mean, I think that as far as the industry goes, dog training is picking up. But I also think that it's not necessarily a sign of the economy picking up, because the types of people that are predominantly calling us for dog training are definitely in a different income bracket than they used to be just 2 or 3 years ago. For instance, 2 or 3 years ago, our typical client was a middle-class person, you know, coming from a family with 2 working parents, a couple of kids, and you know, then you've got Max. And we're talking about anything from paraprofessionals to professionals, or, you know, even just the guy with the regular job. That was our typical clientele. Now I am seeing less and less of that. In other words, less of the $50,000 to $75,000 a year income bracket and closer to the 90 to triple figure, you know, income brackets. We're talking over $100,000 a year income brackets, more professionals than paraprofessionals.
Well, you know, I've wrote about that several times on our blog about the financial status of dog training, and it seems to be a little interesting that a lot of people think that it is still a discretionary income expense. But if it depends on the way you look at it. If a dog has such a behavior problem that is causing a disruption of a family, sometimes you just have to invest in something that will have many payoffs in the future.
Well, I don't even know if it's that, because even when I go to PetSmart and pick up supplies for our business, I'm noticing even at the PetSmart that the types of people that are signing up for training are still in the upper classes. There's not a lot of people doing this, you know, that have minimum wage jobs. And that just goes to say that it's unfortunate that people think that dog training is an exclusive type of status to go after. You know, dog training is glamorous. You know, I can't afford dog training, but I think I can try to train my dog on my own, which is, you know, it's a huge undertaking in some cases, and it's always better to have somebody there to back you up. And there are a lot of different training packages that we offer, but there's a lot of different packages out there by a lot of different trainers. And, you know, even if you go pick up a book or a video, that's better than not doing anything at all.
I totally agree. So what else is going on at Denver Dog Works? Now that we've got all the demographics out of the way, what's happening in terms of the training world?
Well, at Denver Dog Works, I am trying to develop a little bit of a poll, if you will. I'm getting a lot of calls for people that want therapy dogs and or service dogs. But when I get to talking to them and bring them in for the evaluation and, you know, really start to interview them, because signing up for a service dog is an interview process, not just an evaluation. And once I do that, I'm really finding out that people are seriously wanting to have a service dog because I want to take my dog everywhere with me. In fact, I've seen that more and more in the last 5 months than I ever have in the last 15 years. And it's really starting to concern me, because it puts the people that truly need a service dog to provide them with a certain service and go with them everywhere at risk for accessibility. And I don't want to see that happen. You know, when I interview someone and explain to them what the difference is between a service dog and a therapy dog, a lot of them will immediately change their tune and say, "Well, yeah, I just want a therapy dog then." And again, that shouldn't be considered a status. You shouldn't be labeling your dog the same as you say, Robert, not to label your dog as aggressive. You shouldn't be labeling your dog as a therapy dog or a service dog or an agility dog or a flyball dog or anything else, because that might not be what they want to do. And not only that, it might not be ethical for you to go around saying that your dog does this. A therapy dog is a huge undertaking, and it's not just the dog that's providing the therapy. It's you and your dog.
Well, you know, it's a good point that you touched on, Michelle, because we are actually going to talk about service dogs and statuses of in just a second. But before we get to that, why do you think that so many people are inclined to want a service dog these days?
I don't think that they understand what it truly means. I think that they see the dogs being allowed to get on the plane more and more that aren't service dogs. And I think that people are in love with the romanticism of it. You know, it's sad to say, but psychiatric service dogs are fairly new. They're less than a decade old. And unfortunately, the world of psychology is ever growing. I mean, there's a lot of people in bad economic times suffering with depression and anxiety and stress and developing disorders that they wouldn't have in a better economy. And I hate to keep bringing back, you know, the economy, but it has a lot to do with a lot of the clientele that I'm interviewing that are in these situations. And I'm just not sure. I think that they feel like they're being left out of something, and they want to be part of it, and they want to be part of this good feeling that a service dog or being part of a service dog or being part of a therapy dog brings to the table of conversation. You know, have we really come so far that we've run out of things to talk about when we go to the Starbucks? Do we even go to the Starbucks anymore and have a conversation with our friends, or are we going to the Starbucks and dragging along our iPads and our laptops and talking to our friends on Facebook? I'm seeing a lot of conversation on Facebook about service dogs and therapy dogs and you know, meetup groups with your dog and things like that, and that's a wonderful thing, but I'm seeing technology get in the way of the true reasons why you have a service dog.
Well, that sums it up pretty good, and we're going to get right into that topic. Michelle, anything that you want to mention else before we proceed?
Well, yeah, Denver Dog Works and Dog Works Training Centers is a whole lot more than just service dog training, and I need people to understand that you and I started out doing this for working dogs, because when we were doing dog training, we were seeing, you know, a lot of people wanting to train their dogs, you know, how to do things with them in the park and things, but there were no trainers doing that. Everybody was training pretty much the same way, like you saw in the movie Marley and Me, training in a park, teaching a group of dogs how to sit down, come, and stay. And it's not always the best environment for every dog, as Marley proved. So we tried to develop some different types of programs and incorporate, you know, a little bit about how the dog learns into what the dog was originally bred to do.
Yes, Denver Dog Works does train primarily for canine sports and working dogs, but we do train for obedience as well. So if you're interested, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, just about any outlet out there on social media, we are there. Just type in Denver Dog Works or my name, Robert Forto, or even Michelle's name, Michelle Forto, or Dog Works Radio, or anything that piques your interest, and I'm sure we will pop up. So with that, we're going to get into our topic today, and it's about the subject of service dogs and disabled troops. And I'm going to read an article from the Navy Times that was published on December 30th, by Rick Mays, and then I'd like Michelle to respond to it. Some service members and veterans are being misled and possibly harmed by well-meaning charities promoting and promising to provide a trained service dog to help with medical needs, according to representatives of major veterans service organizations. What often happens, according to officials from the organizations AMVETS, is that a disabled veteran who might benefit from a dog trained to do certain tasks may end up with an animal that a charity group has rescued from a pound, has been taught no special skills, and might not be a true service dog for legal purposes. A dog with little to no training might be a great companion, but that's all, said Christine Roof, AMVETS legislative director. Roof said some media stories about nonprofit groups providing veterans with dogs rescued from shelters give the incorrect impression that an untrained dog is essentially the same as a trained service dog. It is incredibly important to remember a service dog may or may not be a good fit for everyone, Roof said. It is crucial to remember that a service dog is in no way a replacement for your rehab program either. Roof said service members and veterans should never pay for a service dog and should try to deal only with groups accredited with Assistance Dogs International, which sets training guidelines and placement standards for service dogs. Dogs not officially recognized as service dogs, sometimes called therapy dogs or emotional support dogs, are pets, and although they may have some basic training, they are not covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act. They may not have access to public spaces and may not enter military and veterans hospitals and clinics. Roof said the ADA rules cover guide dogs for the blind or deaf, seizure alert dogs, and mobility dogs trained to pull a wheelchair, pick up dropped items, and perform similar tasks. A month-old ADA policy revision now also allows public access for psychiatric service dogs if they are trained to perform a specific task. The Veterans Affairs and Defense Departments do not have to abide by ADA rules, Roof said. VA operates on rules dating to 1994 that allow only seeing eye dogs into VA facilities, but allow case-by-case access for other types of service dogs. The Department of Defense has similar rules, giving discretion about allowing dogs into hospitals and clinics based on base commanders and others, Roof said. Roof said access restrictions on dogs can be embarrassing for service members and veterans who believe they have a trained and officially recognized dog but are later barred from bringing the animal into public buildings and medical facilities. Having a companion dog rather than a recognized service dog can also make a difference between benefits. The VA can provide financial help to veterans for service dogs, covering some costs for food, health care, and other things, but those benefits do not extend to the emotional support or therapy dogs, said AMVETS spokesman Ryan Galducci. It is a confusing situation. So, Michelle, what do you think about that? I know there's a lot of hubbub about the different ADA rules, and in particular with the veterans.
Well, let me back you up a little bit to the beginning of your conversation. I would like to agree with parts of this, but I'd like to point out a lot of situational problems with the article. It's really a fine line between the military sector and the private sector once somebody has been released from the military. I mean, they are still going back and forth between both worlds for their medical care, and it's difficult because there are no true certifications for service dogs for regular civilians, okay? The VA and the ADA are prescribing certain criteria for military people so that they can offset the cost, which I think is awesome, but I would like to see that cross over into the civilian world as well and see some private insurance companies start picking up the pace and pay for part of these bills. As far as a veteran not having to pay for a service dog, they all have to pay in one form or another. What they're recommending is that they don't go through a profit company, but they go through a recognized nonprofit company. In other words, that means that they hand them a list of companies that have been recognized by the military as being acceptable and following the guidelines that they have set forth, and that's who you go through. And you do have to come up with a donation. I've seen anywhere between $12,000 and $50,000 of late, depending on the type of dog you need. And the fact that there's so many companies coming up right now, they are taking dogs out of the pound. They are not being trained appropriately. I can give you an example. Recently, not even a week ago, I was contacted by a local church, and they have a gentleman who has been discharged from the military. He is physically fine, but he does have post-traumatic stress disorders, and he is suffering from seizures because of the exposure to, I'm not sure what, but it doesn't even matter. He has a St. Bernard service dog, but he doesn't have a registered or a certified service dog, and the church committee and I determined that just over the phone based on the identification credentials that he has for the dog. He has what is called a therapy companion dog, and a therapy companion dog is being slated as a service dog, and they're not a therapy dog, and they're not a service dog. They have barely received even advanced obedience training. They have barely even done canine good citizen training that the AKC recognizes, and most service dog companies recognize as a good pretest for your dog to undergo service dog training. And that's where a lot of the problems are coming in, and I believe this is where I'm getting all of these phone calls, because people are confused between the difference. A therapy dog is a dog that can provide you with therapy. It technically goes to hospitals, hospices, schools, libraries, and when they go to schools, they don't go to the regular classroom. They go to the special education classrooms, and they help kids with a lot of the autistic kids in their schools have a therapy dog come in daily so that it can help them with touch therapy and bridging and speaking and things like that. But that's not a service dog. This is a therapy dog. A therapy dog goes to one or two prescribed locations during the week, and they have a team member that goes with them. In other words, those people are not party to any individual that is receiving the therapy. They come and they go, and the dog does not go to the post office with their therapy owner. It does not go to Applebee's. It does not go to the Safeway or the Sam's Club. It goes home, and it goes to its prescribed location, and that's it. A service dog is allowed to go anywhere and everywhere with its attendant, and that attendant is the dog's owner, and it is the person that the dog is providing a service for. And this is the biggest misconception. The only restrictions that service dogs have is in military installations and medical centers, such as
okay.
the VA.
Michelle, let's stop right there. We've got to take a quick break, and we're going to come back to that particular segment of the article that deals with that. So we'll be right back.
Dog Works Radio and Mush You Huskies is fueled by Native Performance Dog Food. If you want the best for your canine athlete or working dog, we recommend Native Performance Dog Food. Available at Dog Works Training Centers. Call 303-578-9881 for more information. Native Performance Dog Food.
At Denver Dog Works, we offer a service dog training program for individuals nationwide. Each and every service dog that is trained through Denver Dog Works and Michelle Forto and her team has an individualized training plan. Michelle trains for autistic, mobility, medical alert, and psychiatric service work. In each case, the needs of the individual are met, and training of each dog is specialized for their handler's specific needs. It takes approximately 2 years to train a service dog and takes a tremendous amount of patience, handling, and work from everyone involved, including the family members of the service dog recipient. If you are interested in finding out more about our service dog training program, please visit our website at denverdogworks.com or give us a call at 303-578-9881.
You are listening to Dog Works Radio. We have the best and train the rest. Now back to the show.
And we are back. This is Robert hosting from Alaska, and on the line we have Michelle that is hosting in Colorado. Michelle, are you still there?
I am. You gave me my own commercial.
How do you like that commercial? I thought that would tie right into today's topic pretty good.
Well, it's not appropriate for me to react to it right now, but since that's the first time I heard of it and know about it, wow, I'm taken aback. That's showing a lot of respect to the hard work that I do, and I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Well, today we're talking about disabled service dogs and veterans and some of the issues that they're facing, and we've covered a lot of that in our previous segment, and you can find out more about that by following us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and the like, or you can download our shows anytime through iTunes. Just search Dog Works Radio. So we're going to get right back into it. We're talking about disabled veterans and service dogs. And I'm reading an article that was posted on December 30th by Rick Mays in a very reputable publication called the Navy Times. And we're going to continue here reading it. One example of a potentially confusing message is from Pets for Vets, a California-based charity that takes animals from shelters and pairs them with veterans. Pets for Vets does not claim its dogs are certified as service dogs, but says in promotional material that their program is a win-win way to give back to our troops who've given us so much. Veterans with physical and mental injuries can have a difficult transition to civilian life, and having a companion can help, the group says. Our goal is to heal the wounds by bringing together man's best friend and our returning soldiers while showing them both that we have not forgotten, the group Pets for Vets says. Pets for Vets declined to respond to this article in the Navy Times. Roof said
yes,
there is...
Let me interrupt you. I am familiar with Pets for Vets. They contact me probably three times a year when they help veterans get placed in apartments when they return and they are having difficulty getting into a home. And they are a controversial group, and when they contact me, they would like me to sign off on the dog that they have given as a companion to the veteran and change it from a companion certification to a service certification, and I have refused to do that so far because the two that I have evaluated in the last year have not passed my basic criteria to be service dogs.
So Christina Roof, who is the legislative director for AMVETS, said there's no industry-wide standard for what skills a dog may need to be certified to help a veteran with post-traumatic stress disorder or other mental health issues. The VA is in the early stages of its research to devise standardization requirements for dogs to be trained to help veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. A Laurel, Maryland nonprofit group, Fidos for Freedom, trains dogs in specific skills. They can be trained to open and close doors, retrieve objects, help someone keep their balance while walking, help someone get in or out of the chair, pull a wheelchair for short distances, assist in dressing or undressing, or help someone who has fallen and cannot get back to their feet. The group also trains dogs to help the deaf or hearing impaired by responding to the phone, smoke detector, alarm clock, microwave, someone knocking at the door or calling a name. The sound of something being dropped, even a baby's cry. So, Michelle, you know, my question is what if the veteran doesn't want the service dog and they're kind of being forced into it by a family member or even the VA?
Well, hold on to that question for me because I need to go back to
the last company that you just outlined in the article, and everything that you mentioned that they do for service, specific service training commands, and you said that they do train for psychiatric, none of the ones that they listed or discussed it have to do with psychiatric service help. A psychiatric service dog, a person needing that, does not need them to help get dressed. They don't need them to open and close a door. They need them to do tactile stimulation, comforting, interrupting of thoughts, retrieve a medicine bag on command, those sorts of things. It's a little bit different than mobility training, and it's even more different than autistic training, and it's even more different than seizure alert. Psychiatric service dog training is so controversial because it walks a really thin line between the therapy companion dog and a service dog, and that is what people are having the most illusion with. What sets our dogs apart is that every dog undergoes the same obedience training and public access training before they learn their specific commands, because it doesn't matter what the dog learns in its specific command realm, it must participate in proper public access training so that it behaves properly in public, no matter what it's being trained to do for when it meets the handler. And that's what I'm trying to convey to people, is the biggest problem with all these definitions on all of these websites. Everybody is kind of skirting the truisms of what a service dog is and what they're allowed to do, what they're not allowed to do, what they can do, what they can't do. Nobody is even talking anymore about the fact that it's 1 in 10 for any service dog. You know, guide dogs for the blind are impeccable about that. It's 1 in 10, and then you take the 10 of the 1 in 10, and then you figure out which one of those 10 will actually be able to do this spot on and save a person's life. It is such a high percentage of failure rate, it's not even funny. So ask me that next question.
What if the veteran or soldier does not want the service dog but is being forced on them by someone else, and you know, they're worried about the stigmatization of having this dog? You know, a lot of veterans, and I come from a military family, are very
proud,
very macho, and they
yeah,
don't
proud.
Want to have to say that you know, they need a service dog.
Well, they don't want to have to say that they're disabled. They're very proud. And you know, I don't deal with a lot of military people, so I'm going to talk about everyone in general. And because I deal mostly with psychiatric, I'm going to talk to you about that, because that is the most difficult thing for my clients, and that is the stigma. They're walking around looking normal as ever, and yet they have this dog, and they get asked, they actually get harassed. Why do you need this dog? Why do you need this dog? What does this dog do for you? You're not blind. You're not missing a limb. It's ridiculous how people are behaving. When I do my interview process, I don't want to interview the family member that called me, because typically in psychiatric and, you know, in military, it's a family member that's calling me. How can we help? We'd like to offset the cost. We don't want them to know how much it is. We just would like them to get back to living and get on with their life, and we think that they'll do better with a dog. And when I interview the person, number one, I treat them as if they're a person. Number two, I usually can figure out the people that can handle the burden of a service dog and those that cannot. And when I say burden, please understand, when you have to carry another person, another thing's objects with you, it makes your life a little bit more stressful, anxious, and difficult. And whether you're in a wheelchair, walking with crutches or a walker, or perfectly mobile on your own, when you add in another element of another being, it makes your life more difficult. Speak to any mother out there. Anytime you had to carry around your kid, your diaper bag, the stroller, and all of the other little things that go along with a baby, it can make your life a living hell. So there are certain personalities out there that don't need that added stress because they're already at their limit. So adding in a dog can sometimes make it worse. Add in the wrong dog, not behaving all the time, it makes it worse. So you have to be very careful, and you really need to find a person, if you're going to do this, that knows what they're looking at. Because when I do this, and this is why I think, Robert, you don't do this anymore, but I take into consideration everything that the person is telling me, not just medically and physically, but I'm listening to their emotions. I'm listening to their daily routine. I'm putting all together. How are they going to incorporate a dog into their lives? Is it really going to be beneficial? What are the pros and cons? Is it going to put them in a detrimental state, or is it going to enhance their life? And there are people that I tell, you don't need a service dog. You need to seek out other counseling, but you don't need a service dog. And sometimes when they listen to me, I've had people call me back and say, hey, you know what? You were right. I moved on with my life. Thank you so much. Or we'll get a dog together and we won't do a service dog, but they'll go through dog training with me, just basic old obedience, no big deal. And guess what? Because I bring so much light into their life and show them that they can teach a dog something and be useful again, they don't need the dog to go with them everywhere, but they need that dog to come home to put a smile on their face, and that helps them through their day. Do you see what I'm saying?
I agree, and I hope others do too, and we welcome your comments. You can send any of your comments to us on any of our social media forums or even by email live@dogdoctorradio.com. And pay attention to Michelle's upcoming articles. It's going to be released this week on a series called Is It a Real Service Dog? And I'm going to make sure that those get posted on all of our blogs and article sites in the coming days. So we'll make sure we get that out to you as well. Michelle, do you have anything else to add? We have about 10 minutes left.
Well, I don't want people to think that I came across angry and evil and even bitchy today. I take this subject very seriously. You know that, or you wouldn't have put me on the spot. And by the way, everyone, he put me on the spot today. I did not prepare for this interview. I am very, very passionate about this, and I don't like seeing my clients, my future clients, my past clients being taken advantage of because people want the status of a service dog. Or you have companies out there that say, oh, you're being denied an apartment because you don't meet the credit. Well, we'll get you a service dog, and they can't deny you that. There's people that are doing this, and that is causing a lot of problems and a lot of ripples in the situation for the ADA that I see within the next decade. We will be under a regulatory board and a licensing procedure for service dogs, and I would love to be a part of the building process for that, and I honestly can't wait to become a part of it because I think it's going to take away the romanticism of what is becoming, oh, I can get a service dog, okay?
Well, we welcome the comments and suggestions. And on a lighter note, Michelle, in just 3 weeks from Friday, I will be on the first race for my Iditarod career, the Don Bowers 300 Memorial Race up here in Willow. I'm looking very forward to it. What do you think about that?
Well, you know I love you very, very much. And you've always said that you were pretty athletic. But when I watched you play lacrosse a couple of years ago in an adult league, I didn't see very athletic. I saw a 30-something-year-old man out there rough and tumble with 20-year-old college kids trying to hold his own, and I saw you break your collarbone pretty badly. And just recently you broke that same collarbone on a tree, so as much as I'm cheering you on, I am scared to death that you're going to get hurt.
Well, you know, this is a different era. I'm slimmer, trimmer, and more dedicated here on the dog training circuit, so I think I'll be just fine. It is only a 300 or 200 miler. I think I said 300 a minute ago. It's only a 200 miler. Looking very forward to it. We've done a lot of training over the last few weeks on the river, the Big Sioux River. We've done at least almost 1,000 miles training up to this point with the dogs. I think we are more than prepared to give it a shot.
So what is the feedback you're getting from your training partners? Do they think you can hold your own, or do they think that you're just, you know, out of your element?
I think that they think that we're all doing just fine. You got to remember a little bit of perspective here. A new friend of mine, his name is Bob Story, 65 years old, and he's going to attempt to do the Iditarod this year for the first time. And I'm definitely cheering him on. It will be a great spectacle to see that old guy finish the Iditarod. And if a guy that's 65 can do it, there's absolutely no reason that a guy that's just approaching middle age cannot do it as well.
Hey, 65's not old. If he's out there braving the cold on those trails, 65 is not old, because he's out there living life, and that's great for him. And you're turning 40 in just a few weeks, and I'm hoping that you are engulfing yourself in our new hometown and the new life. I know you're having city withdrawals, but I'm going to tell you, you're not missing much.
Well, it is snowing in Denver, and it hasn't snowed up here almost all month, the month of January up in Alaska. So we do have a couple of feet on the ground, but it's pretty much just covered with a very thick sheen of ice, because we had a pretty good meltdown on New Year's weekend. So we're having to truck the dogs quite a few miles over to the river just to even get in a training run. So our training has been hindered just a little bit, but we're looking forward to this race at the end of the month and more to come.
That's right. And, you know, Denver, the part of the reason why you moved to Willow is because Denver doesn't get any snow, and we typically have snow in October, you know, September, November, December, all those months, and this year we did not. In fact, we only had 1.5 inches of precipitation all of fall, which was a record for us, and we're supposed to see 9 to 12 inches of snow within the next 12 hours here in Denver, and that's an extraordinary amount of snow for us. But the mountains where the resorts are, they are at a record high for precipitation and snow. So it's really hard to gauge. I mean, you cannot do this living in Colorado unless you live at or above 10,000 feet. And to get to 10,000 feet in Denver, believe it or not, that's a long ways away, and it's difficult. They're closing out the ability to have dog yards here. In fact, I think that there are very few left, if any at all, in the foothill area where we used to live in Park County, because they are seriously cracking down on the amount of dogs people have because of that tragedy they had 5 or 6 years ago where the people were hoarding dogs in implorable conditions.
Well, there are a couple of competitive dog mushers that do the Iditarod. One lives in the Buena Vista area, which is about 150 miles or so from Denver. And there's another guy that lives, I believe his home base is near Steamboat Springs. So there are a couple of Iditarod guys, but they definitely do not live in the city.
That is correct. And Steamboat Springs is about 250 miles from Denver, and very bad passes and treacherous roads. And, you know, it's just the way that it is down here in Colorado anymore. I believe there's more mushers in the Sierra Nevadas in California than there are here in Colorado. It's just not what they do here. So that being said, I don't know. Are we doing a show when we're in Portland at our business meetings?
I believe we are. We're having an author that's going to be on February 6th, and I believe you had set that up. It's about assistance dogs, as a matter of fact, and some tips and tricks that you can do with assistance dogs in a brand-new workbook that is going to be released. And I'm anxious to get a hold of that book and read it so we can have a pretty good interview with her when she comes on.
Well, I received my copy, so I will bring it with me in case you didn't receive yours. But so far, it's a great little handbook. I'm really enjoying it, and I think it's going to help people see the difference, and I'm probably going to ask for, you know, a dozen books or so I can give them out to my clients so that they can start passing it out to people as well, because anytime somebody else writes a book means I don't have to. It makes me happy.
So there you go. You're listening to Dog Works Radio on dogworksradio.com and part of blogtalkradio.com/dogworks. You can find us anywhere on social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Blogger, wherever you want to search, we are there. If you have training questions, give us a call, 303-578-9881. Michelle will be happy to talk to you. Until next week, on behalf of Michelle, in the snow in Denver, this is Robert from Alaska. Never forget your dreams. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.